From the Firebird Radio Studio, it's the Authors on Fire podcast with nationally syndicated radio host and producer, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the International Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, Book Song, where we create a unique song to complement your book, and our newest Book Blessings, a personalized way to set intentions for your book or your books. This is the Authors on Fire podcast, and I am Pat Rulo. Today, I have a recent Firebird Book Award winner to share with you and a friend of mine. She is Joni Marie Iracci, and the winning book is Vatican Daughter. Joni is a retired registered nurse who returned to school in her later years to pursue her love of writing, earning a BA from Sarah Lawrence College and an MFA in creative writing fiction from Columbia University. She is a member of the Authors Guild and American Pen Women. When not writing or buried in a book, she loves tutoring essay writing to college-bound high school students. We have been long-distance confidants for several years. Welcome back, Joni.
Thank you, Pat, for having me.
Oh my gosh, it's such a pleasure. Yeah, it is. Jinx on a Coke. All right. So congratulations on winning the Firebird Book Awards. Thank you for sharing with us.
Oh, thank you. It's exciting. Always exciting. Tell everybody, every author I know, I tell them, you got to do this.
You're a good one. Let's start a little bit backwards. Rather than dig right into your book, I mentioned that you returned to school later in life to pursue writing. What inspired you to take that leap? And how do you think that your previous life experience shaped your stories?
Well, my trajectory into going back to school was an interesting one. I lived in Westchester County in New York at the time. And Sarah Lawrence, I was somehow on their mailing list, and they would send me, you know, invitations. They, at the time, they had continuing education for adults. It was called CCE. And, you know, I would throw it out. I'd get it every April, open house, please come. And I just throw it out for years. And then my kids were still bungee corded to the nest, but could get in and out of the house by themselves. So I said, let me go. So I went, I couldn't open the door. It was the session was held in some little house on campus, but on the cusp. So it was its old home, and it was rickety door. I couldn't open. I said, oh my God, this must be an omen. I can't open the door. How am I going to go to school? And somebody opened the door, and I went in, and it was wall to wall people, mostly women. And it was surreal because it was two floors, and the staircase was facing the door, and on my back was literally on the door, and the director came down the stairs and pointed to me and said, you need to do this, come upstairs and talk to me.
Oh,
I thought, I still get chills, I can't believe it. So I went upstairs, Joelle Saunders, I'll never forget her. So I went upstairs and I sat there, and she handed me the application. I filled it out on the spot. She said, go home and write an essay. I wrote an essay. And that was it. The rest is history. So it was continuing education for adults, but who knew, like 20-year-olds were adults. But I was, you know, I was the one of the eldest. I was the eldest graduate. So if you look me up and Google a few pages, you'll see me and Vera Wang, because she gave the commencement speech. So somehow we linked together. I was interviewed by the Journal News because I was such an oddity. But it was fun. You know, the kids are away from home for the first time and they're scared. And I was like the mom, you know. So, and I lived nearby and I could feed them and have them over for holidays and things like that. And the professors were great. The women were harder on me than the men. Yeah. And then it was, of course, the medical. Sarah Lawrence is a great school for, you know, if you're going away from home for the first time. They have a very interesting way of making the kids feel at home because it's, well, it's not a huge school, but every week, every other week, you meet with every professor. So every professor gets to talk to you for face to face for 20 minutes. So they can see if you're struggling, not just academically, if you have an issue or you know, of course I didn't need that per se. I mean, I could write at the time, and I really wasn't, I was a struggle to keep up with the work, you know, and home, you know, I didn't go home and just put on my pajamas and start doing homework. I had to do other things, but take care of all my stray cats and my people. And but the interesting thing was the professors would, my 20 minutes involved all their medical problems. So they'd say, my wife has Lyme disease. What do you think I should do? Oh. You know, things like that. And mm-hmm. my knee hurts and, you know, whatever. So, I mean, it was fun. I mean, it was a little disconcerting when you walked into a classroom and the professor was younger than your child, way younger than me, but younger than your son. You know, that's the other thing. Gosh. But yeah, so then I took time off. I took about a year off, and I got jury duty. And so I was writing that my first book, which had a court scene that I had to rip up after I got jury duty for 2 months. I got accepted for jury duty and Columbia on the same day. I got home from, after being picked on a jury, I was on a jury for almost 3 months in New York. And I came home and my son said, Professor Kirschenbaum from Columbia called. I said, what? You know, so that's what they do. They call you up. So I thought it was a mistake. I kept saying, I think you have the wrong number. But anyway, so Columbia was, you know, more of the same. I was, you know, the eldest, but that worked. A lot of people write medical stories, like they put medical subject matter into their work, and it's not correct. You know, even if it's fiction, it still has to be, it can't be outlandish. So I helped with that. And they helped me with technology, which was the bane of my existence. I couldn't even format. I gave up. I had to format my thesis and it had to be bound. And I could take it to UPS to bind it, but I could not format. So they did that for me. You know, they were wonderful. And I took them out to dinner. So even after graduation for a whole year, we met once a week and worked on we continued the workshopping. So that was, you know, it wasn't easy. I had to read 1200 pages a week till my eyes were bleeding. And I was in school with brainiacs. I mean, they were so smart. They were not just astute with technology, but they were smart. They were really smart. So yeah, and I'm still in contact with some of them. So that's
cool. Nice. Yeah. You've had quite some experiences that lead up to it, and all of that plays into your ability as a writer. And I'm fascinated by this particular book.
So I mean, this Vatican Daughter was a work in progress. I started it 10 years ago. Believe it or not, I was standing in the Vatican looking at the Basilica thinking, I wonder what's going on in there now. I got the title. Like, it was almost like a lightning strike. So I had the title first, thinking like, what if a girl was involved? Let's see. I had no idea where it was going. I put it aside, wrote a few notes every once in a while, you know, and went back to school, wrote the first book. And then, during the pandemic, what else was there to do but, you know, write? So 8 hours a day, I sat and wrote like a job. And it took me down a whole bunch of rabbit holes. So I, you know, it's about the first American Pope. Can you believe it? You know, I do a tremendous amount of research. And, you know, I would never put pen to paper, as they say, without arming myself to the teeth with credentials. So that's why I would never write anything unless I went back to school and had a master's degree and could, you know, had some credibility. before. And so writing that, I mean, I had gone to 12 years of Catholic school and I saw the hypocrisy at the age of seven, you know, and of course my mother was a diehard religious. She had one foot in the convent when she met my father. So she was fanatical. And I didn't get it, you know. And anyway, I lived through part of this scandals in the Northeast. I was there. So I figured had those scandals never happened, I couldn't have written the book. But since they did, it was a viable story. So I did a lot. I sat and I researched and I jotted down notes. I had post-it notes and notebooks and just paper everywhere. And as I was researching Italian Jewish last names for a character, I went down a rabbit hole and I found that story about, now he was one of many children. He wasn't the only child. Shocking. Mm-hmm. So it actually, the story was written, was a book, and it was written by Professor Kurtzer from Brown. So I contacted him and we had a nice chat and he told me, I said, why isn't this more well known? And he said, well, you know, like Catholics were embarrassed that it happened and, you know, in the future, of course, and the Jews were embarrassed that they allowed it to happen. So, you know, the times were different. It was the Papal States, Italy was not united and the Pope was in charge. So he put all of the Jews in the ghetto and they were wealthy merchants. They were not, you know, poor, but they had servants and they had illiterate Christian servant girls because the Jewish servant girls couldn't work on the Sabbath. So this one particular family, the Mortaros from Bologna, had a child who was about three and he wasn't well. And the parents were sitting around the bedside and the servant girl assumed he was dying. And when the parents left the room, she baptized him. So 3 years later, she confessed to the parish priest who reported it to the Vatican because it was illegal for a Jewish family to raise a Christian child. So they came in like stormtroopers and swooped up the child and raised him in the Vatican. They were never able to get him back and he became a priest. And the interesting twist was the servant girl ended up getting pregnant, being an unwed mother, and the Mortaros took her in and took care of her.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I know. So, yeah. a terrible story. And I think the Pius IX, they wanted to canonize him and it didn't go through. It didn't stick.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
So I weave that into the story where, you know, Sophia, of course, she has an affair with the Pope, who was a cardinal at the time, and she has an affair and results in a child, and the Vatican kidnaps the child, and she's injured in the process. Well, I know Italy pretty well. I didn't know Rome as well as I knew Venice, so I went to Rome. I went to Rome and Venice for 3 weeks, and I walked 88 miles. Of course, it was October of 2019, and I got very sick, and I didn't know what it was. I said, I think I have some Asian plague.
Oh. Well,
I did. I did, for sure. And but I got the lay of the land, you know, and things happen. That's how things happen, you know.
You come up with
the story, so that's...
Well, your novel raises questions about blind obedience and moral courage and female empowerment.
Right. To be brave. I think women are braver now than ever before. But yeah, so you know, she's fearful, of course, at first, and she thinks nobody will believe her, but she's got the strong matriarchal landlady who she returns to when she gets her memory back, and she encourages her and, you know, tells her the story of the Mortara family and, you know, that Sophia thinks no one will believe her. And she said, trust me, people will, because she had absent years. She was living in Venice with nuns and all big cover up, you know, but that's the way it is. Like, don't be fooled by blind faith and hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. I saw it firsthand. I was actually, you know, growing up the way I grew up, of course, it's like an indoctrination, and you feel like you should continue it, and you must, it's like a brainwashing. So you must like indoctrinate your children. So I didn't like the way my children were being taught religion. My son was 7 and he came home and said the teacher told him dogs don't go to heaven, and his friend's mother was going to hell because she was divorced. So I was like, that's it, we're done. Mm-hmm. So I taught for 8 years, and I had who I refer to as Father Gucci Loafers in in charge. And he was so caught up in the wealthy community that he had, you know, he had designer dogs, and he had, he'd decorate the church like Cirque du Soleil for Christmas, and always pontificating at me. And we had huge fights because he would pick on the kids. Like, these were 8th graders. And I said, you're never going to see them again. This is the last year. And if you keep yelling at them, they're never going to come back. That's what they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. So he started screaming at me that I was judging him, blah, blah, blah. End result, he went to jail. Ooh. He went to jail. He was stripped of his collar. He was embezzling money from the parish. He was unbelievable. And he had zero remorse. He got out of jail. And who did he bump into all the time? Me.
Of course.
And he looked like a deer in headlights. But he would bump into me in like the weirdest places. I guess he didn't think, because I taught in Connecticut, I guess he didn't think I lived in New York, but I did. I commuted to, you know, Connecticut wasn't that far. And he would see me at a restaurant, or he would see me on Arthur Avenue, which is a section of the Bronx where, you know, it's a little Italian section of the Bronx. And I'd go around the corner and there he was. I mean, so many times in Manhattan at a street fair, there he was. So I think he moved to the moon because I haven't seen him in years.
You haven't seen him anymore.
But oh. You know, so I had all these, I was armed with all this information, you know, that I just needed to figure out how to work it. So right. it took about a year, every day for a year to get it where it is now. And then I had no intention of writing another one because I'm not like a sequel kind of girl, but I woke up with the first line in my head. So I had to bang that out. And then I actually have a second book to the first book.
Oh.
So I wrote that. That's just sitting quietly on my computer because I'm not really quite sure what to do with it. But I don't know, because it's this, that first book was published by, you know, they didn't do anything for me, that publisher. He was, I don't know, he wasn't really into it. So I took it from him, and then one of the other authors decided he was going to go be a publisher. Well, you can't, you know, you have to kind of know what you're doing. So that was him. So he took it, he did a different cover. So that was a second edition. But then I said, it's nowhere. It's not available. People are trying to buy it. It's not available. He goes, you complain too much. You're fired.
Oh, good grief.
So I don't know like what the status of it is. It's mm-hmm. It's there. I do get, you know, like my little $3 from Ingram every time somebody buys it, but I don't know if he's still getting a cut. I have no idea. I don't even know.
Move on, you know.
Yeah, I don't care really, yeah. You know. It's the second book is better than the first.
So we have a sequel to Vatican Daughter coming up.
We do, called Women of a Lesser God.
All right. We can look forward to that.
That'll be a while, but yes.
That's okay.
In the process.
So, I mean, you've had quite a winding journey and lots of interesting twists and turns, and especially in the publishing aspects of it. You've kind of seen the underbelly of all of that. I'm wondering if you have any advice for writers, writing and stamina and the persistence of it, which you obviously have shown to us. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't always take my own advice, but if you write one page a day in a year, you'll have a book. So, you know, don't give up, just write. I mean, you don't have to edit as you go, do that at the end, revise. You know, I revise as I go usually, and then I go back, but don't give up. You know, if you give up, you'll never do it. So, you don't have to go get an MFA. You know, you can, there are plenty of other avenues to, but a lot of people think they can write. A lot of people contact me and ask me to read their work. And do you want me to read it? And do you want me to be honest? Do you want me to tell you fluff? I don't know. So I try to be honest, and they don't always like that. I recently was asked to be a beta reader. I said, well, what do you, and I got a list of instructions that looked like the Dead Sea Scrolls. I said, what the heck? I said, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm not going to follow your list here. I don't even know where you got this list of how I should beta read. And I said, all right, you know, and I told her what she needed to do, and you needed heavy editing, and I don't know, you know, so people don't like that. So they don't, but do it, you know, make sure you have a couple of set of eyes before you put it out in the world, because there's a lot of junk out there. But, you know, it depends on what you want to do. You know, if you just want your name up, you know, out there, and you want to say, I wrote a book, then that's fine. But, you know, figure out your priority before you,
spend time doing that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, and it's to do it right. But what is the definition of doing it right? I don't know. Like, we live in a society where everything is monetary and judged by that. Somebody asked me in a podcast 2 days ago, well, you know, how do you attribute your success? And I said, I don't consider myself successful, mm-hmm. because success is measured by money, you know, and I'd starve to death.
No, I get that. You almost have to change your expectations, right. You know, and find something a little more intrinsic to motivate you. What's readers' reactions been to this?
I've done about 30 podcasts since April. One, you know, I mean, not everybody's as professional as you are. People think slap on a headset and, you know, clear off their kitchen table and that's it, you know. And this one out in, I don't know, Timbuktu somewhere said to me, what's your relationship with God? That has nothing to do with this, mm-hmm. you know, and that's a personal thing anyway.
Yes.
But,
oh, gosh.
You know, that was a weird question, but it's been amazing. I did a New England Broadcasting Company. I talked to, oh my God, this guy was so excited for this book. He thought this was the greatest thing. And he was so, he said, it's irreverent, but it's so good and this and that. And I did another one with a man in Toronto. He's wonderful. Oh my God, he's a humanitarian. His father was a rabbi, and he's just, I don't know, like, he has a way of ferreting out information out of you that you don't really want to say. Mm-hmm. So I'm there all like broadcasting my life. But he knew more about me than I knew about myself. So he really did some heavy duty research, but he was great. Avram Rosenzweig, he's amazing. But, you know, I've done that kind of thing. So readers, the first, you know, as you know, it goes to NetGalley. So the British NetGalley, the British version of NetGalley gets it before the book is, they get an art copy. So there was one absolute hater. She did not get it. She did not understand it. She ripped it apart. It was awful. That was my first review. I was devastated.
Oh my, for a first.
So I was devastated. And so then I decided, so I wrote a little response, which I should never have done. So that opened the floodgates of more hate. Mm. And then I looked her up. So on Goodreads, she has 12 pages of reviews, and Crime and Punishment gets 3 stars.
Oh, of course. Yeah, there you go.
So I'm thinking, you know, anyway, most of the reviews are really, you know, but reviews, Dan Brown told me not to read them. Do not read reviews. So I don't anymore. I don't read them. I don't even look because, you know, I mean, people that you know give you 4 stars, like really, or they write this whole epistle. Reviews empower certain people. They think it gives them some sort of power to, you know, but why would you do that? Why?
Yeah, just don't leave it, I guess. Yeah.
You know, like my grandmother used to say, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. Why? You know, I mean, a young author asked me to review his book. It's not my genre at all. It's fantasy horror, which is, I struggled to go get through it, but it was well written. You know him.
Yes.
Yes. Kent. Yes. Wonderful Kent.
Oh, I love him.
I love him too. And he's just so very serious, very sweet. And just got engaged. Like, he's just amazing.
He's excited. He loves his, he told me, I love my fiance to death.
Oh, he does. He does. And you can, it just oozes off the, screen. Yeah, it's great. And the book is fantastic.
It is.
I mean, it is so fantastic. And I got part of it that other people might not know because I studied all this stuff. I said, this is Gnosticism. He goes, my gosh, you saw it, you understood. I said, yes, I got it. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, of course I reviewed it, of course. Like what? Like, why not?
Yes, you left a lovely review too. So yeah.
He's amazing. And I just thought, oh my gosh, and he struggles, you know, and he said, I have such high hopes, you know, and he travels all over doing these book events. And I'm supposed to go to Delaware. And I said, what should I do? He says, it's really not worth it because I have to fly, I have to pay for the airfare, and everything's prohibitive now, you know, and stay in a hotel and to sell 5 books. You know?
It's a lot. It is a lot. And as we talked about earlier, we just don't even have an answer.
Nobody does.
There's no magic formula because if there were, somebody would be a gazillionaire.
And the other thing is be very, very wary, new writers, of scams.
Scams. They're scams out there lately. Every day in my inbox, I get so much junk. I actually have a dear author friend who was just scammed out of over $20,000. Just believed that, you know, somebody magically found her book and was going to do this and this. And you wonder how people fall for it. But then, you know, you put in so much work, you're just looking for that little kernel of
positivity. They are predators. I get at least 30 a week.
Yes.
And they're all, now the latest one is book clubs. And our book club wants to read your book. And it'll only cost you $250. I was like, no, it's not how it works. And, you know, they prey on newbie authors who don't know. And you're looking for that kernel, like you said.
Yeah.
But it's unbelievable, the scams. And somebody down here was scammed out of $30,000 by a so-called screenwriter who promised to make a movie out of his.
Oh,
and this guy's in his 80s, you know, the author is in his 80s and he's, you know, wants to leave the last, you know,
legacy.
And and they, he's got a ton of money, but $30,000 still.
Well, still.
And his investment guy lives here and he asked to speak to me. And I said, all unsolicited stuff is a scam. You have to assume that, you know, if they find you and you don't find them, then, and if they don't, my publicist said, if they don't have a website, but they copy other people.
Oh,
so steal the identity, like somebody stole Dan Brown, pretended to be Dan Brown. Well, I happen to have been to his house, so I entrapped them with different questions.
Oh, what color are your curtains?
I told him, I feel like I work for the CIA, you know? So I told him about it. I said, I entrapped him with the name of your caterer, you know? Oh. So anyway, he thought that was a riot. But I guess you haven't made it until you have somebody impersonating you.
Is somebody, exactly. It is so scary out there. Be wary.
It's very scary. And, you know, like $250 here, $250 there. And you're thinking, oh, you're going to get, you know, a leg up, or you're going to get some momentum, and you're just getting ripped off.
It
might have been easier in the old days, you know, where you went to the publisher with your wheelbarrow full of papers. I don't know.
Oh, it's true. It's true. There's so much sophistication out there. And if you're not keeping up with the trending technology, you can easily be taken. So you need to be wary. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. All right, my friend, as we begin to wrap up, anything that we missed that you wanted to highlight specifically, either about your book, your journey, advice?
Well, I can be contacted via my website, Joni Marie Iraci, IRACI.com. And I'm happy to hear from readers. Don't try to scam me. I can see through it. But if you want to talk about your writing or my book or anything, please contact me. Mm-hmm. I'm on Facebook and all those, you know, the usual suspects, Instagram. And Vatican Daughters, available on Amazon. Reinventing Jenna Rose is still there somewhere. And stay tuned for the next book in about a year from January, I guess.
So, we will stay tuned for that.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm so thankful to spend time with you.
I'm so great to hear your voice again.
Your passion for storytelling and the world of Vatican Daughter has been a joy to hear about. Lots for our listeners to find out. So thank you for sharing your journey with us, Joni.
Thank you for having me.